Hello, everyone. This is episode 55 of the Dresden Files podcast, member of the Broken Jars Network. And this time we're going to be talking all about Ghoul Goblin, one of the comic books.
Yay!
Woo!
Sorry, noise warning.
Yeah, woo! Also, we're going to spoil the shit out of it, so go away if you don't like it.
And so many other things.
So. Yeah. But we're going to be breaking down the story of it and what we find out of it. One thing that kind of stood out to me before I even got into the story was it was very obvious that the artist had changed. So everything looks a bit different from Welcome to the Jungle.
Which we won't go over, by the way.
You're such a nerd.
People were wondering.
Well, I don't know.
So they're different than... it's just like... You probably know this, Justin. You've gone through them multiple times, right? Like, is it a different one for each one, or is it one guy at first, and then it's another guy for the rest?
I'm not 100% sure, and I think a few of them have several years between them, so it wouldn't surprise me they have, like, different artists and whatnot, but I will now pay attention to that as we're going through the comics.
Well, like, I got used to the way Harry was looking in Welcome to the Jungle, and now he looks different.
Oh, and my also, God, it's kind of like when we argue about what he looks like online. It's like that all over again.
But one thing to point out is I don't think he looks nearly as tall as he should.
Well, to be fair, Jim Bruce has kind of said like he thought it wasn't. He's regretted he made him that tall.
But he stuck to it, and he confirmed 6'9".
Yeah, and the comics actually are where that's like in print that he's 6'9". Like in the books, it's always kind of like, yeah, I'm over 6.5 feet tall. Is not necessarily the same as like I am fucking Bigfoot, like so.
Hey, Bigfoot is taller than him. We've got confirmation on that.
Right.
In one panel, when you can fit Harry and what I assume is an average-sized woman, and like you can see both their heads, I don't think that's accurate to Harry's height.
It would be really cool if it was just like you know, her head and then like Harry's chest here now, and that's all we see.
Yeah, I'm sure the artist made concessions to make it not as shitty. Like, I mean, if you've ever stood next to a tall person for a photograph, you know that there are certain physical things, and it involves non-Euclidean geometry is all I'm going to say, all right?
Yep, yeah, I've been there. But, all right, so this takes place after full moon, but presumably before grave peril, so it's in between those two.
Right. So a couple of months after full moon, for a little bit of timing and before grave peril, meaning before we've even seen the Black Council, not that I'm, you know, hinting at that for any reason. So,
yeah, that is true. And I assume this is taking place in spring because I think both full moon and grave peril took place in October. Is that right?
Okay. I can go with spring because it's kind of rainy, but I don't remember it specifically being called out, and I don't remember what time full moon took place.
I remember it's like, we're still dealing with what happened in the spring and summer, and everything is cold, I thought.
I remember a full moon is like coldish, when it goes to the woods and stuff.
Yeah,
lately, though, because I never reread those books.
Exactly.
You fucking heathen.
All right, so let's do this. So Ghoul Goblin starts in a dark and stormy night. No, wait. No, it doesn't. It starts in freaking Egypt. So you get a little bit of a background because we're dealing with another cursed bloodline, you know, because apparently that was the year of Harry's cursed bloodlines, you know, since he just dealt with the Loop Guru. But you basically see this Major Archibald Talbot, which must be like, you know, never mind. I'm not going to make that joke because maybe we have a Talbot that's listening. But anyway, he's just a major douchebag. We'll go in with that. He basically storms in and he can't wait 5 minutes for a table. So he goes and like flips off some dark cloaked guys. Meanwhile, telling off Captain Lawrence, as in, you know, Lawrence of Arabia, and basically telling him to shove off because RHIP rank has its privileges. And so he walks up to the ominous, smoke covered, you know, creepy dudes in Egypt, which is always a good thing, and tells them to get lost. And then they curse him. We find out in the editor's notes of this issue of the comic that they're actually the precursor to the Black Council, or they're members of the Black Council. And this is back in 2013, before that's even been really hinted at from the books, at least according to the notes that I read. So I didn't go triple check all my publishing titles and things like that. But basically, you get a little bit of that, and then you're going to get some more history because that's how Harry works, right? So I thought that was kind of interesting that he brought in, you know, Lawrence of Arabia and the Black Council.
And you tell me one sitting. Lawrence of Arabia. It's not a feat. I've heard it before, referenced before. Don't actually know what it is.
Do you have the Crib Notes version?
What?
I'm talking to the director.
I know Lawrence of Arabia said something to do with Arabia.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know much about this guy. He did something in Arabia.
See, Alex doesn't know either. Do you have a quick note version, Justin, or is this like...
Well,
or is this, have you just heard it referenced before?
Wikipedia has a one-page version that has part one and part two.
Oh,
so, yeah. But basically, it's back in the First World War, and you know, he runs around having adventures. I mean, it's a huge, long movie and very classic, and it's important and influential, and you should go familiarize
yourself with it. Like 1950-something, like black and white movies, or what are we talking?
Early color. I'm pretty sure they at least colorized it if it was originally black and white, but yeah.
Okay.
So, but it's definitely...
what this guy did, but I feel like it's kind of cheap to put him as just a side person when, like, his name, you recognize what that name is, that he was an important person, even if you don't know what he did. It's just kind of like, okay, he's that person that said one line and then he goes away.
I didn't recognize it at all.
Well, that's because you guys are heathens and he's going to be in peace talks, so read up on it.
Ah, the beloved peace talks, that's going to have everything.
Right.
Lawrence of Arabia is going to be in peace talks, okay.
For some reason.
I see how it is.
You know what's funny is if I throw enough of these, it's in peace talks out there, I'm going to be at 50% right. Like, half of it's got to be in there, right? Okay, so we fast forward to Chicago, where Harry is fighting what I'm labeling as a Sahuagin. So if you guys are familiar with the terminology from D&D, it's one of their little swamp monsters or reptile, let's see, amphibians more correctly. But he's basically fighting, you know, like the creature from the Black Lagoon in Chicago. And, you know, he gets in water, which is really bad for him because magic doesn't work. And, you know, this critter at least half lives in water. But he pulls out his handgun and shoots it three times and kind of moves on with life. But
question.
Yep.
Do guns actually work underwater? Because I kind of thought gunpowder...
So there's a couple of things. First of all, some of them will fire from water. You can do all the research on YouTube if you really want to. But you've got also MythBusters did an episode where, like, if you're firing in water, the bullet tends to go about like 4 feet and then stop. He's pretty much at point blank range, so he's roughly 1 to 2 feet from here. The other question is, like, how many things in the supernatural world get plugged because he did it in Welcome to the Jungle at point-blank range when they're supposed to have tank armor for skin, which, P.S., won't be pierced even at point-blank range by a handgun. And then he does it here as well. So, you know, it's dramatic and cool and stuff. So I'm rewatching a lot of TNG, and I'm going to tell you, the technology works the way that you need it to work for the story as often as not. And I think that's how the comics at least work. You know, because I think Butcher puts a little bit more effort into it, but so far it seems like, hey, this is dramatic for the comic. Let's put that in there, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, I bring that up because dude's almost definitely part of the Fomor, even though it's not mentioned. But, you know, it's a nice little nod. Again, you know, presumably years before we even hear that word really used in the Dresden Files. So basically, this, of course, gives Harry a cold that he deals with the rest of the entire book, because that's, you know, the first three books of Harry's life has to do with that. He goes back to his office and gets accosted by Prescott Tremaine, who is a deputy sheriff from Boone Mill, Missouri, which as far as I knew, Boone Mill is not an actual place. So I couldn't find any actual reference to it or anything like that. And then for reasons that I don't entirely remember, I think dude's just given him the sob story of the cursed family. And then he has a flashback to, you know, Harry's cursed family. So you get to see a little bit of Justin DeMorn and Elaine and things like that. Cute kids, by the way. Creepy dude, of course, is creepy because we drew him that way. And apparently has a penchant for, you know, for good art. So Go figure. But basically, Harry goes to Boone Mill, meets the Hick sheriff, who is kind of a douchebag because, you know, his deputy kind of went over his head to go pull an outsider into their small town. So you've got all of those kind of small town tropes going on. And he takes Bob on a field trip, which I thought was kind of interesting because, I mean, presumably he takes Bob when he goes out of state, but this is the first time I think we've actually seen it. So you go back through a little bit of their family's cursed history, including the was it grandson or great-grandson who went to World War II and came back with a light allergy and then died in a fire, except, you know, maybe the fire didn't actually kill him, but we're pretty sure he's dead because we see his body in one of the panels.
Yeah,
and so, the light allergy thing.
Right.
Then there's the guy who died in a car crash, but no one is sure what he hit.
Right. Right. So that's fun. And then the, so I think it was, so Major Talbot's granddaughter like tried to kill one of her own kids. And you just have these weird family tragedies that after, you know, 200 years, somebody says, wait a minute, something might be going on here. You might be cursed. And therefore you enter Harry Dresden. Okay. Not 200 years, but 100 years. So in this case,
four generations or so.
Right. So you're of course going to the latest funeral for one of the kids who got murdered off screen. Is that the one?
Two. There was like a brother and then a sister that was murdered when Harry took the case, and so they're at the later death.
Gotcha. Okay. So you go there, and you know, like every villain, right? They always go back to the murder scene or the cemetery for some reason. And so they fight, you know, what is the bad guy right now.
Yeah. And it was really jarring because I get that comics are a different form of storytelling, but it was, that's a family member, bad guy. And they just immediately jump into a fight with no, like, foretelling of this is when shit gets real.
Yeah, but that's kind of Harry. Like, Harry's like, no, fuck that guy. So they go over and try and kick his ass, but in classic dramatic fashion. I mean, he at least stops to tell, hey, Press, I'm about to start a fight. You think that's a good idea? And he's like, no, okay, we're doing it, you know, because that's Harry. So they go over and promptly get their asses kicked and then have to save, right, have to save Prescott's girlfriend because she, of course, gets damsel in distress and captured by the bad guy.
But she doesn't stay like, that way. She actually fought back a bit.
True.
How ironic.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it's noir. So that's kind of, the first issue ends on kind of a cliffhanger where, you know, bad guy, evil dude is got, you know, the girl as a hostage, you know, so to speak. So wrapping up that little bit. So she kicks the dude backwards in the nuts, which apparently is painful even when you're supernatural, right? So I don't care what denizen of the supernatural you are. If you have danglies and can lose them, it's going to hurt. So in classic fashion, the dude is faster than both the trained deputy and Dresden at dodging, you know, the fire from Fuego, which looks more like lightning to me right now. And, you know, it's a white hot fire. And then the bullets from both of their guns. So, of course, they shouldn't have been doing what they were doing anyway. So the sheriff chews them out. They go to a diner because that's like the only other standing building in a small town like this, right? So you've got like, you know, town square, which is like the jail and where the sheriff hangs out and where the actual mayor is. And then the diner.
And then there's actually a small thing before that is that while they're getting chewed out by the sheriff, Joseph Talbot, the next eldest one, was yelling at him. And the way the sheriff talked about him is like, he's going to be the next mayor. So he's obviously important in a really tiny town.
Right. Well, presumably, but yeah. I mean, they're all, of course, have it a bygone conclusion. That's going to be the thing. When the current mayor, of course, comes in and talks to Harry because Joseph, who's the, you know, upcoming mayor, or at least that's what everybody thinks, is trying to drive Harry off, which means that the current mayor, of course, wants him to stick around. And, you know, she's old and seems crazy and stuff like that. And she's got a dark secret. Dun, dun, dun. Mm-hmm. So you, of course, don't ever find out what that is. I'm just kidding.
So they go to the diner, which was named Silver Bullet Diner. Can you get more, like, out there, ominous?
It was established in 1946. That's important because it's on the sign.
Why would you name a diner Silver Bullet?
In Missouri? No, I don't know. Because they had a werewolf infestation in 1945, and in order to honor the heroes of that, they named it Silver Bullet Diner.
Okay. Right? Okay.
That's how that works. Doesn't your town have one of those?
No. Don't think so.
Must just be an us thing.
We don't have diners here.
And Boone Mill. So, what do you have on the side of the road if not a diner?
Yeah.
McDonald's.
Right? Because it's like, when you take a road trip to the neighboring country, like, where do you stop for food?
McDonald's. or a gas station.
We should have exported the better part of our culture than...
Like fast food, like McDonald's, Burger King, but usually McDonald's, or a gas station that serves, like, they serve pretty decent food, most of them, like, actual, like, decent food where you're like, this is pretty good.
Right. I mean, to be fair, we do that a fair bit, too, but you can find a diner in, like, every city in America still, I think, so.
Yeah, they have comfier booths, and they live off of ice cream, I think.
Some of the gas stations have like sort of a diner attached to them, but it's pretty rare. I think maybe one or two in the country or something.
Nice.
If I had an entrepreneurial mind, I'd try to go to Denmark and fill that niche, but I don't think it's worth it.
Good point, actually. So,
all right. So back to Ghoul Goblin.
Right. So they go to the diner and they talk about stuff. And it turns out that like Press and his girlfriend are like in college and they've got big aspirations to leave small town America. Cause that's also not a thing that we've ever seen before. And Harry's going to go do research, and he goes and does research out in the woods. He goes and talks to Joseph first. That's what happens. So he goes and checks out Joseph's house, which turns out Joseph is crazy dude.
Yeah, and he has a perfect circle wrought iron fence, and he has all sorts of occult symbols on it. And this was a weird moment when I noticed that among those occult symbols was the black sun. And I don't know if that was intentional on someone's part or not, but while it has occult ties, it's usually been taken up by neo-Nazi groups lately. And it was in two different panels, which made it seem kind of intentional.
Interesting.
I mean, the comic book is from, like, 5 years ago, whatever.
I think it was stretching back far then as well. It's just, like, I get that it has the occult ties, but it is also having ties elsewhere. And it's an interesting decision to have it in two different panels. Did no one catch that in editing? Do they even edit comic books?
Well, and while it hasn't been as prominent until lately, you know, until the last year or two, I mean, the whole... Neo-Nazism doesn't exist in a vacuum. It's been around for, you know, decades. So that would be interesting. I mean, I'd want to do some more research about the artist or something like that, but maybe they were just like, you know, it's kind of easy to draw, you know, for all I know.
Not,
so.
It isn't actually more complicated than other things. It's like,
Which one's the black sun? Is it the one with the circle and all the spokes coming out of it, or is it the little?
So it kind of looks like a wheel with a bunch of crooked-looking spokes, but it's got it's more lines than other.
The crooked one, because on the same thing, there's one like two over from it that's just literally a big black circle with spokes coming out of it. So apparently, I need to go do some more of my occult research because I'm falling down on the job there. But I mean, he's got various symbols of life, and he's got the Star of David is in the same panel. On one of them at least. So let's see. I don't think we see the Eye of Both in here. And there was I think I recognize that for a different reason. Never mind. But anyway, I did not actually stop to look at the symbols. Probably should have. But you've got like the boy and girl symbols are in here and an upside down Ankh. And yeah, there's a bunch of stuff. So,
okay. You're looking for it on the first panel when he shows the fence. That it's almost directly in front of Harry, so it's below right. the like. I think it's an Orthodox. It's got the two lines of a cross, and then it has an infinity symbol underneath it. I think it's mm-hmm. tied to Orthodoxy, and it's just to the right of the Ankh.
Right.
And so that's it, and it's kind of the more complicated ones to draw.
Sure. And two to the left of that is the one that I saw first because it's bigger, and I was like, it's a spoke, like, with a circle in it. That's not hard. But yeah, I get what you're saying. And it does show up in the other panel, but I mean, that could be continuity as much as anything because it looks like they've got all the right symbols in the right place.
Yeah, and it looks like they were repeating, but it's just that the one that you can see most clearly is the Black Sun.
Hmm. Noted. All right. So weird. Now you know which one of us is the white supremacist out of the three of us. So like, she saw it immediately. Just kidding.
Okay. Moving on.
So
Tox is crazy guy.
He goes to crazy white supremacist guy's house, and in true Hick fashion is met with a shotgun and basically says something along the lines of, there's no time to explain, run in the house and get killed, where he is promptly runs into the house and gets killed. Meanwhile, Dresden's outside and has an encounter with a ghoul, which is really cool to see all the grotesqueness of the long claws and the tongue and the fangs and stuff.
Deformed jaw that can probably unhinge and
all of the stuff.
Also, but
she kind of looks like a tiger to me, you know, like some kind of tigress. So, but basically they throw down and
is that a reference?
No. But they run around, they do the dance, and he shoots fire at her, which still looks like, you know, lightning to me. And then the guy gets dead inside, and it turns out he's managed to shoot himself in the guts with his own shotgun that was bent over in half. You know, terrible curse, this thing is, total accident. And then Harry, of course, kicks himself because, you know, he didn't save him, and somebody else got to the guy, presumably.
Yeah, I mean, he says that it must have been the goblin, which was also named Griswold. So they're both of them getting to this house, and Griswold just got Joseph while Harry was fighting the ghoul. And then the ghoul promptly runs away.
You know, like you do.
Mm-hmm. And Harry gets covered in Joseph's blood as he feels terrible, and then he takes Joseph's cat as Prez shows up, and it's like, well, someone's got to feed the cat, and he just walks away.
Right. Yeah, so...
And that is how Harry got Mister.
No. But there is another part here where he actually does a soul gaze with Joseph as he's dying. So that kicks off in issue 3. And so you see like Joseph's entire life story, because that's, you know, a thing that can happen in a soul gaze. And so you basically see, you know, him dealing with deaths in the family and doing his occult research, becoming a white supremacist, and then building the house and that sort of thing. So, sorry, that joke's not going to get old now. Basically, you see Dresden start to get drawn into the beyond whatever that is, and then Joseph turns around and tells him, you know, you wait there for 5 seconds while I step through this, boop, and then disappears. Then Press shows up, and Dresden's there with, like, the murder weapon and his blood all over him, and he's like, it's not what it looks like, I swear. Just kidding. Press is totally on his side.
Yeah.
So Press kind of stalls the sheriff as Dresden slips out the back and runs back to. Does he get to his car now? Yeah, he does.
Yeah, so he gets to the car and he goes to a gas station and gets a bunch of supplies so he can do a summoning ritual. And so he goes off.
Now he's doing research.
Yeah, and he does a circle. He puts the cat in the middle of the circle with a bunch of tasty things, and then strips off all of his clothing because he has to strip off like the trappings of man. And by the way, he's sick and getting sicker.
Right.
And he summons a spirit that it possesses the cat for a little bit. And the cat says, I can't help you, but I'm going to eat this food.
Well, ish. Yeah. I mean, the cat goes and finds the person who's actually able to help. And I'm trying to remember because I think in this scene, they actually talk about temperature and what time of year it is. Let's see. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, make sounds because this is a podcast.
I know, right? This is my thinking noises.
I'm looking, letting you know what's going on in case you're like not on video.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely freezing, but I can't remember. So, so basically, he goes and freezes his nuts off, possibly literally. the cat gets possessed by, you know, a spirit and says, you know, come back later, and you know, your blah 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 will be rewarded. You know, basically, they're gonna go get the actual guardian spirit of the woods. So after that, he goes and stays at Press's house because that's totally not a crime or, you know, a whole bunch of other weirdness. He has some weird encounters with Press's girlfriend, Amber.
Yeah, and this is the part where I'm going to spoil what's coming next because this stood out to me.
Spoiler.
Yeah. So when the ghoul first showed up, I noticed that for some reason that looks like the girlfriend named Amber. And then, like, so... When Harry stays at Press's house and the girlfriend's patching him up, she's actually touching him. How does he not notice that she's the ghoul?
Not sure ghouls have any, like, particular magic in them that he wouldn't feel.
I kind of assumed so in the same way that, like, he would for any another magic user, or he would notice if he was touching, like, a vampire, I'm pretty sure. It just seemed like, since that's an established thing that can happen.
Without him noticing it was her until she decided...
It's because the plot. It needed to be dramatic irony in case you figured it out before Dresden did. With the whole bump, bump, bump and everything, all right?
It's one of those continuity things that they should have, like, made sure she wasn't the one doing it or something.
No, it's way more dramatic to have the... Boy Scout, hero, cops, girlfriend be the evil monster. Or, in a super double twist, the second evil monster. So, yeah. Okay. So, basically, they have an encounter, and for reasons that are probably important to the story, but I don't remember, he goes and talks to Maddie and the kids, if I recall correctly, at, like, a library.
Yeah, so she works at the library when not... attending community college, so she is the one who's raising the youngest children, and they go talk to her because Joseph had it set up at his house that he could actually protect them. He was trying to defeat the curse, protect them from all the crazy things that are coming after them, and so Harry just needed to convince them to go stay at the crazy house.
Right, but the other part of it, I think it's brought up, is that Joseph, like, he was kind of doing the right thing but didn't actually have any power, but now that there's a wizard here to power the stuff, you know, yeah, it should work out. So that either happens in this conversation or later. But then he goes back out into the woods to do more research. And that research involves getting jumped by a Naga, which is a big giant freaking snake, if you're not familiar with that part of lore. So that's apparently what the guardian spirit is of these woods, which is fun.
Harry says that Nagas are, like, bound to neutrality. But I kind of thought Nagas were just evil in most settings.
Yeah, I mean, it's another one of those generic, like, I'm a snake, I'm a giant snake, I'm going to eat your face type of things. But yeah, like, the Nagas apparently are neutral and, you know, specifically hail from, like, India, because when the Naga takes its human form, it's a little Indian woman. So, so there's that. I'm a be frank here. My nerd lore is about 60, maybe 70% D&D lore. So, like, if you want it out of the monster manual, I got you covered. But as far as like every culture's background and all of that stuff, like, I get into some of it, you know, like the djinn and things like that, but not a lot of it.
I can't remember anything specific out of D&D, but I thought in D&D monster manual, Nagas were just evil instead of neutral.
Probably.
Okay.
I mean, I can look in about 43 seconds, but
I don't have my monster manual with me. It's in the living room.
You're failing in your nerd duty.
It's called D&D Beyond. So, and I was going to reference that earlier if somebody quipped about the Sahuagin pronunciation, because that's where I got it from. But let's see. So there's a billion different kinds of Nagas. So I'm going to go with the Guardian Naga, because that seems to fit the best here.
Okay.
But let's see. And then, of course, it's got a whole section on them.
I mean, I realize I might be mixing up Nagas with other Naga-like things.
Guardian Nagas are actually lawful good, at least in 5th edition. So some things did shift a little bit, you know, back in the day, from back in the day and that sort of thing. But yeah, it looks like this could fit pretty well with D&D lore. So.
All right.
So there's good ones too. Don't judge it just because it's a giant man-eating snake and could chomp Harry in one bite, which it totally tries to do, by the way.
Yeah, and then he just puts down his weapons, and now because she has an advantage, she puts down her weapon as fangs and turns into a woman.
Well, and part of it was denying his nature, because that's what this whole communing with nature spirits thing is about, is that Harry's able to separate himself from the rest of mankind by proving that he's not there to dominate it, hunt it, eat it, or something else. So when he's talking to the nature spirits, yeah, he throws down his staff and blasting rod, and then she's like, huh, son of a bitch, I didn't think you'd actually do that. So then they have a conversation, and she says, something, something, there's a game afoot. Basically, it's a territorial dispute between the ghoul and the goblin. Not that you could tell that from the title of the book series or anything. And she says that if you fuck this up, I will have to eat your face. And probably the rest of you too, because I'm a giant snake. And really, like, it's hard to get that many calories. So, so yeah, they basically have a conversation where she kind of reveals the plot and that, you know, it's specifically
a territorial dispute. She set it up, right? She was like, she's a mediator.
Yeah, right. She's mediating and, like, calling who gets to win, setting up the rules, and enforcing them.
Right.
Harry.
Which is great for Harry, of course. We get to see some of that sass. I don't think it was this conversation. I think it happens later. But yeah, the thing that bugged me about it the most, actually, is of all the things that I felt like were contrived, I must have missed a beat there somewhere, because all of a sudden it went from, I'm here to talk to you to figure out what's going on. And it's like, now you're in trouble, you son of a bitch. And if you fuck this up, I'll kill you. And it's like, wait a second. Like, I just came for questions. Like, how am I now, like, implicated in this whole thing? It's like, just because I'm a wizard and I'm present, now I am also bound by the rules. And that seemed a little odd.
Well, you know wizards, they meddle.
Well, sure. I mean, and trust me, Harry is here meddling. But just, it's kind of funny to be like, you know, you have stepped in the bear trap now that is this competition. So good luck. Try not to die or get killed or, you know, I'll have to eat you. What? How do I win this? How are you neutral? How is that? Whatever. So,
I mean, I suppose if I think and kind of stretch things a bit, Harry could in some fashion cheat. If, for example, he got Michael with the holy sword to come down and, hey, protect these people because they're innocents, right? I feel like that might be cheating in some fashion.
Well, and I want to say that the Naga actually had some inside knowledge that we find out later as well, where like the Naga was saying somebody else is at stake here too.
In that conversation, I remember her saying that, like, so the order of the killings are going to go in this specific order. It's going to go Alex and then Maddie, and then the youngest is going to go in the order of birth, essentially.
Right.
And so that means Harry and Press know exactly who to guard first.
Correct. Which that definitely helps. So they, of course, take everybody back to the crazy house, which from the air looks like a pretty crazy house.
Yeah, and it looks pentacle-shaped.
Right. And out front, in front of the drive, they have St. Peter and the Dragon, right? So they have a replica of that sculpture. So more white supremacist stuff, you know. Let's see. Actually, there are more things here. Nope, I don't see the Black Sun this time. Just saying.
Okay, cool. But, I mean, it could genuinely have been like an accident.
I
don't mean to smear anyone.
Now I'm just giving you crap, though. And there's a wider shot, and I don't see it in that one either. Now they broke continuity. There you go. See what you've done?
Gosh darn it.
So they basically take the family back to Crazy Dude's house that has a combination of taxidermy on the walls and occult symbols, because you really want to creep the kids out at night. And he basically tells them, hey, we're going to protect you, and Press is there to protect them as well.
What else happened to that damn cat?
It's gone.
It ran off.
The spirit's like, yeah, I've got a body, and it was never seen or heard from again.
the cat just disappeared. Also, like, Bob was taken out for a single conversation, and then he's put back into a drawer to be forgotten about.
It didn't just disappear. It's freaking gone. Anyway, so I don't know. I, like I said, I'm not necessarily the sophisticate reading these either. Like, I just kind of flip through them, and I'm like, cool, let's get to the story. And yeah, I don't care about the cat. The cat probably stepped on a landmine or got caught in a fox trap for all I care. So, and you're right. Like, Bob never makes another appearance this entire story, right? It's like, yeah, I'm going to put you here with the socks. Bye forever. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
It's just kind of weird pacing. And you can, all you have to do is like just tie things up at the end. Show one of the children holding the cat or something. That'd be fine. Make Bob allowed to like say another quip or something. That'd be fine too. I like Bob.
I think the part of the Bob thing is like they knew he was at the one motel in the whole place, so they knew his room was under surveillance. So, you know, that's probably why you don't see Bob anymore. But yeah,
and in other dangerous situations, and Harry needs to have Bob, he shoves him in a backpack.
Yeah, that's why he came up with that rule. This is still Harry in like this was barely after book two,
so he's still dumb.
Well, you really only see him
stuff him in the 15, backpack. And he's still kind of dumb,
right? You see him stuff him in the backpack for the first time in Grave Peril, though, right?
Yes.
Because he's like, "Don't throw me under a rock," so, and yeah, that's where that joke starts and then pays off, like, you know, 9 books later. So. Yeah.
You better come back.
Yeah, like seriously, one of the greatest exchanges with Bob of all time, and that's saying a lot. So, so Harry, for reasons, goes to see the mayor because she didn't want him to leave town, and then she tells him this entire sob story about how she used to be like a deputy ambassador in Egypt. And
yeah, that this is out of order.
This is out of order.
Yeah, she's so he might. Thing. I think. So Harry does go see her, and she just says, "You need to take care of this. Don't leave town until you do." And
gotcha.
She doesn't seem surprised by all of the deaths and violence, but she's kind of on his side still.
So right.
Then I'm pretty sure they go to the diner, or they track down Alex wherever he was, which seems like he's partying.
Bowling alley.
Okay. And they find Press's girlfriend flirting with him and drawing him out and away from people. And then when she gets out of the building with Alex Talbot, she turns into a ghoul. And I think there's one swipe towards Alex, and then he's dead at some point, even though they don't show it until mutilated corpse later. It's like, this one has pacing issues. I don't understand what's happening until they explain it 5 panels later.
Yeah, so you see her be like, "Oh, you fools, you figured out my identity." And then you see her with her arms like way up here, like she's not even touching the guy, like she's French or something. And then you see Fuego, and you see Fazare, and then you see her smash into something. And then, yeah, like you said, 5 panels later, he's like been hit by a truck and landed on a bunch of bullets. Like, it doesn't even look like claw marks to me. It just looks like he's got like bullet holes everywhere and then smashed into a truck. Like, what the hell?
Later, Press did say she pushed him in front of a truck.
Right.
Is it? But at the point of being a ghoul is to kill people.
Maybe there are rules about that too.
And where was the truck?
Because to be fair, right, we never see them actually kill the people. They always make it look like an accident somehow, even if it's a stupid accident, like hit by a truck, the shotgun like turned into a bow and then blew my insides outside. Like,
I think, okay, the first one, I know the first death that Press came to Harry talking about was like, okay, yeah, some of these were scavenger marks, some of these were definitely not, and some of these might have been bullets, but some of these definitely were not.
Gotcha.
It kind of seems
not
like,
always.
Yeah, and it's just, where the hell was the truck? You see it in the panel where you see his dead body, is at that point it's like, oh, this guy's dead. Okay, I'll get down off my...
Okay, so then in typical small cop douchebag action, the sheriff shows up right at the inopportune moment and pistol whips Harry because he was resisting arrest. You know, when he sat down and just didn't do anything. And then Harry winds up covered in his own blood in jail. Dun, dun, dun. So that's pistol whip kind of wraps up, you know, the, what? That's the 4th fourth issue, and then the start of the fifth issue, he's in jail. Yeah. So Press, a little bit before the jail scene, Press goes and tells Maddie, well, shit's fucked because, you know, Dresden's in there, but I'm totally going to save you. And turns out Amber was a ghoul the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
Then Harry gets in the jail cell and he talks to the Naga again for reasons. And this is where he pretty much tells her to shove off, if I remember right. So,
yep.
Yeah, let's see.
And then because the only one who can override the sheriff is the mayor, Prescos talks to the mayor and she seems kind of heartbroken and invites Press in, blah, 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 something about tea and what's going on. My lover, who you've never heard about, is going to take care of things.
Right. And still not the sob story, huh? So
no, not happening in the car.
Yeah, you basically get a little bit more of a tease, and in like every panel, she's wearing this red necklace that is totally not going to be important later. So don't even worry your little head about it.
I actually don't remember that necklace being important. I thought it was going to be important, too. Like I said,
don't worry your little head about it. Of course it's important. It's in every panel. She's wearing like a freaking, like...
Nightie, I think is what they're called.
Well, but it's, she's got a robe on, so she's wearing a robe and a freaking necklace. Like, the necklace is important.
Yeah, and yet I don't remember it being important. Maybe I just stopped giving a shit at that point.
Where do you think the thing that we're not talking about lives? All right, so the douchebag sheriff does the whole, like, nightstick on the bars thing and taunts Harry as the mayor walks in and tells him to let him out because... you know, she's the mayor, and he's like, you know, you're not technically my boss, and you're going to regret this, and, you know, stuff like this.
So it's the sheriff in Missouri, or whatever county of Missouri they're in. I know in some places in the U.S., for some bizarre reason, you elect your sheriff.
I think that's most places, because she threatens him, like, I may not be your boss, but I'll call a special election, and you will lose it.
Right.
So, I don't understand that. Why do you do that? They're law enforcement. Why are you electing law enforcement?
It's a holdover from an earlier time.
I guess so you can potentially change it, even though I don't think most people actually know you can elect a sheriff. Therefore, they don't care. They don't vote. Person stays in power for 30 years.
It's worse than that. You always vote for the person your parents voted for because they know best, right? So
I just don't understand why you do this.
That's also America, why a you history I'm not fully familiar with, other than I want to just say it has to do with, like, you know, the Wild West and all that jazz. So
if I understand that right, if you wanted to, like, in the U.S., like, and there's, like, a sheriff election, you could, like, be like, I want to be sheriff. No experience at all. No training. He's like, I'm going to be sheriff.
Theoretically.
Yeah, I think so.
Be that stupid.
Andreas, yeah, like, yeah. Did you pay attention at all in the past year and a half at the America Politics?
I mean, the big orange guy, that's, I thought that was like a one-off. I mean, next election, it's gonna be, they realize what a mistake they did. Like, everyone is just gonna be like, okay, fuck me, what did we do?
Well, I mean, there was a lot of people that were hoping so, but still, I mean, like, I'm not sure what would have to happen at this point. I mean, like, I don't know if we're going to go the whole, like, he would have to eat a puppy on, like, live television, if that would do it, or, like, what that is, but...
My point is that he didn't need experience, and we're not a political podcast. I'm getting scared now.
Well, it's all you're talking about white supremacists, so...
There's a difference between precedent, though I think you should have experience as a politician, but it's a different thing being a politician, having an opinion about something and trying to make sure something takes a direction that way, and then enforcing the law. Like, I feel like there's two different things. I don't know. I mean, this is me.
It's very off topic for this podcast, but maybe afterwards we can do some research for you. So, because I'm not 100% sure myself, honestly. And that seems like a poor answer for a citizen of this country. So
what we need is that Justin does his political history podcast, and then we'll just all learn from that.
I would get down to the sheriff level for like 20 years. So
maybe you should do it just as a favor to Andreas.
I know, right? That could be a thing, but
okay. Let's go back to Ghoul Goblin.
So we flash back to Ghoul Goblin, where they're in the car ride, and apparently Press is driving, and she tells them her entire sob story about how she's this total hot young deputy ambassador of Egypt, and she decided to do the whole Tomb Raider thing, and then she went into the wrong tomb and almost got eaten by mummies, and then she was saved by a Kareen. Which is
Karin, or I don't know how to pronounce it.
If you look it up, yeah. No, if you look it up, I think it's Kareen, but it's Q A R I N. So they get saved by this guardian spirit with one little twist. She was supposed to die there, and that guardian spirit was supposed to save the guide, and it saved her instead. Bum bum bum.
Go.
Basically, because the thing had been following them around and fell in love with her and abandoned its sacred oath to, like, you know, protect its person.
That he's been doing for millennia, countless millennia, because he's a guardian spirit and he just threw that all away.
Right. And, you know, other guardian spirit thingies in the world are going to, like, you know, make him suffer for the rest of eternity because he made that one fuck up, because that's, you know, that's how that works. So. So you get a little bit of that backstory. They go back to Joseph Talbot's crazy mansion of horrors, and they basically start getting prepared for the attack, the inevitable, you know, the ghoul and the goblin are totally going to...
When I saw those panels the first time, I just couldn't help but think, like, okay, so we got to do the occult symbols because we need to do that for protection. But then what he's saying is like, okay, I'm all in on the crazy guy. I'm going to get me some stuff that's... It's like for the decoration, it's got to match, you know?
Right, right. Well, and that's what's funny too, is like you made a big deal about the Black Sun and stuff like that, but then he's got, like, you know, statuettes of Indian gods and goddesses, and he's got pyramid stuff and ancient Egypt stuff everywhere, and like he just literally had all the things. So I did not see an actual Iron Cross though, so they weren't that, you know, obvious, but yeah, you've got all the things there otherwise. Maybe that's on the other side of the house, and that's why we don't see it. But they basically come up with this total crazy plan on how they're not going to get every single person killed, and then they're going to do the whole, like, let's hold up in the house at night and make sure that, you know, everybody survives. They supposedly had warded the place so that people couldn't get in. Because they make reference to that a couple of times, but you don't actually see it or anything else. It turns out Dude is also armed with a steampunk armory, because Press finds an armory that has, like, some kind of, you know, rifle with gadgets and, like, dials and bronze and stuff all over it. No sigils that I can really see, so it straight up looks like steampunk had a baby with an M16, and that's what you've got. So all
we're missing is, like, a dirigible parked on the roof?
Right. Well, that's, of course, how they're getting away. I mean, it does have a periscope in the house, so maybe the house was a dirigible. So, I don't know. But, yeah, like, the whole function of, like, what are these gauges on this rifle? I don't know, but it's magic, okay?
For all you need to know. Aesthetic qualities that you just can't understand.
I mean, really, you know, he basically bought all things supernatural or things that was like...
As we all know, steampunk just means you take something old in English and you tape a gear to it.
Right. I'm actually kind of thinking I could totally do this cosplay as Press, and I think like 98% of Dresden fans wouldn't know what I was dressed up as, walking around with, like, gauges taped to my airsoft M16. Like, that'd be hilarious.
I could, like, do this. A real M16?
I could take the AR-15. I don't have an M16 because that's a whole bunch of additional paperwork and money I don't want to spend. So
you have an AR-16. Not that I know the difference.
Yeah. Well, at least you didn't CNN and just called everything an AK-47. So, and honestly, I mean, whatever this rifle is not an AR-15 anyway, but it's got some parts to it and a pretend. Anyway, we could dissect the gun later. We'll do a Gear Gadgets and Guns comic book edition. How about that?
In 10 years.
In like 3 years.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've got to have more material before Peace Talks comes out. I'm sorry. Don't
keep watching, right?
Don't hate me.
that was a sick burn.
Okay, so he goes in. He finds his steampunk armory, which is funny because it's got like he's got like modern gear and weapons, but you know, whatever. He does the whole Jane thing. Gets the big gun, and they basically get attacked. Apparently, the war doesn't stop giant rocks or tree branches.
But that's so, it's like a circle, right? So that's like it doesn't stop physical, non-magical objects. Is how I understood it.
Sure. So yeah, so they're throwing things in, but I mean, if that were technically the case, then that's all it would require to break the circle in the first place, and then they could get in, right?
But it's a super circle.
Right. It's, yeah. Anyway, long story short, Press makes a break for his patrol car and drives out of there in a hurry, and they had set up something in the back seat that was supposed to smell like one of the kids, if I remember right.
Yeah, it was, they had a mannequin dressed as Maddie, the current eldest, and had a little bit of her blood on it, so the ghoul would want to go after it, and she did.
She does. And then Press drives the car off of a cliff or something. He drives through the woods and somewhere finds an explosion that the car lands in the middle of. So
drives the car, jumps out at the right moment, and Harry blows it up because they had extra canisters of gas in there.
Right. Okay, that's right. It's a good thing this car landed in the smoking crater. So that's their giant complicated plan for taking out the ghoul. And when we flash back to the kids in the house, because we need to see what they're doing, you have the Mall Ninja Armory, where they've got all sorts of axes and shields and double-bladed swords and sword staff things and more steampunk weapons and a periscope. Yeah. As you do. Doesn't your house have a periscope?
I mean, no. Mine has like two.
Two?
I'm okay. Cheap and I live in an apartment.
So it's a European thing. So out of all the weapons in the entire armory, she, of course, grabs the, like, Darth Maul-style staff with, like, two blades on the other side, right?
Yeah,
and
this being
Maddie, and she's the next one marked to die anyway, right? So it turns out that Griswold is totally not an idiot. He hid inside before the ritual was complete, which is part of why Amber the ghoul freaked out anyways, because she knew he was inside and she was stuck outside. So he gloats, and he's a total classic villain. If I recall correctly, they actually out him as a specific kind of fairy, don't they? Or is he just a goblin the whole time?
I thought he's just a goblin.
He's goblin. Okay. Just a goblin, I believe.
Gotcha. All right. So we've got generic goblin and,
well, he rigged the safe room with some form of explosives. Right. So Mayor and two children are like having to be saved. So the Karin that was going out with Maddie and helping Harry and all that goes back inside to save them. And then he does save them. He goes back to Harry. And I think at this point, Maddie does the whole like attack, stab herself thing.
So, yeah. So to flesh that out just a little bit. So Maddie goes outside with a weapon, and she and Harry are facing down the goblin, Griswold, and the mayor sends the Corrine out to protect them, and he's doing it, and then the goblin's like, hey, by the way, I've totally rigged the house to explode, and so the Corrine does what he does best and says, sorry, I can't protect you, I've got to go protect, you know, my love. So he runs back inside and saves everybody in the exploding house, right as Amber walks out T-1000 style out of the flames, minus the cool silvery look. She kind of looks like she got, you know, blown up by an exploding cop car.
Really good on the artist on that one.
Right. They go inside and they have this very heartfelt moment where the Corrine says, yo, sorry, I've, you know, fucked up like 11 times now, so I'm going to finally go do the thing I should have done. And as Harry's getting his ass kicked and Maddie stabs herself with, you know, a double-edged sword, because that's what happens with that, then basically the Kareem possesses Harry or infuses him, however you want to say it, and Harry basically like evaporates the two bad guys.
Yeah. And to give Maddie some credit, she did stab the goblin as well. It just, you know.
But it's a goblin. And no, but seriously, like, go look at the panel of weapons she could have chosen and where they're located. She literally picked the worst one because it's dramatic.
Yeah.
Like if you look at it, it's actually in the back corner over a table. She reached past 11 other daggers, knives. I mean, some of this is stupid and you wouldn't really want to use it. Like, there's the double-bladed dagger that you could use to, like, disarm or break somebody's sword. There's a crossbow. There's an axe as big as she is. Better grab the double-bladed thingy that I can stab the bad guy and myself with at the same time.
I mean,
not the mace, not the pistol, not the battle axe, not the shield, but that thing.
Some of the family curse deaths must have been from their own stupidity.
At least partially. I mean, Major Archibald Talbot was at least a total tool.
At least the South, so. Right?
Eh.
It's not quite that hicky.
No, it's just... It's like in the middle of the country, really. It's not the South.
I have no idea. I mean, I got a vague idea.
You're just throwing shade because you're on the wrong side of the pond and you can. It's cool.
Correct side of the pond.
Hey, you don't have diners. How can it be the right side?
Right.
Trust me. It's great here. We got like health insurance and everything for everybody.
Oh. Ooh. Now that was a burn. And I can't even go get it treated because I don't have health insurance.
This is not a political podcast. This is not a political podcast.
It's also not politically correct either, apparently, today. So,
you know why all the ghouls live in America? Because, like food and stuff is cheaper there, and they have to eat a lot. And they don't have to go to the doctor, because they'll just eat and heal. So it's, like, great.
No comment. So Dresden evaporates the bad guy, and Maddie's still bleeding out and saying what a stupid choice that was. And he's like, oh, so sorry, we were totally going to bang, but I got you killed instead, which is Dresden's entire life, right? Mm-hmm. And I say evaporates the bad guys because, like, literally in one frame, there's, like, all this pink stuff from the Kareem, and then, like, the next frame, it's like, huh, where'd everybody go? Is the party over?
Yeah. Really good at pacing. Mm.
Yeah. And it ends with one more, you know, visit to the cemetery with a generic Talbot tombstone, because there wasn't enough of the Talbots left to bury anymore. They were just putting them all in one coffin and just burying them that way.
Yeah, grave. They managed to have a mass of children. Let's just give them a mass grave.
And the Naga shows up and lays down a rose and probably does the whole, like, I'm sorry that was tough for you, Pat, Pat, Pat. Sucks to be immortal. So
I thought the Naga showing up with that rose was very like, okay, I just set this whole thing up, and I was like, I made sure all these people died, basically, because I decided that they were the competition. And I just put a rose. It's all good.
Well, to be fair, she was more enforcing the rules of the, like, of the dispute, the property dispute, the territorial dispute, but also kind of like enforcing the curse, right? So, which is the other part. It's like, you know, because it's part of folklore and all that jazz, but it's like, sorry that you had, you know, an ancestor who was a total tool 100 years ago. That means all of you need to die stupid and horrible deaths. The end.
Yeah. But Harry did the gracious, gentlemanly thing and purged the curse with some of the Kareem's power and Maddie's freshly spilled blood because she's a dumbass.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
As you were describing all of the other weapons that she should have chosen, it's like my opinion of this girl just went down.
No, yeah, it's bad. And like, I didn't realize how bad it was until I was looking at the thing and I'm like, it's in the corner, in the back. Like, you could make arguments on size, you know, like she's maybe a little girl-ish, like she's Karen-sized, right? So she can't, you know, grab those big battle axes. So maybe she went for something smaller and literally had to reach over 24 daggers of varying sizes to get back. Like, I mean, maybe there was a rapier on the other side of the room that she could have seen, or I don't know. It was just, again, I'm a blame. I'm going to say the comics are going to get a pass, whether they should or not, just because they wanted it to be dramatic and didn't necessarily have 300 pages worth of research and, you know, story to tell. But yeah, I'm still not like an amazing fan of the comic format, right? But I think Warcry is going to do a fair bit better. I'm not saying we won't have anything to kind of bash on there, but there are some scenes that are you're pretty much only going to get out of a comic book format like that. You're going to get those from Warcry. So that's part of why I'm excited about that.
Right. I have like kind of repeated issue with things that are like taking the source material and then doing their own thing. And so when the mayor is telling her sob story, Harry guesses that the being that she has is a djinn. And she says, no, it's greater than that. It's the Karin. It's a djinn, but bigger or different or something. So they keep, just like the TV show did, they keep taking big things and throwing it in really small disputes and therefore like lessening its value or importance.
I don't know. It's pretty comic books. Like, or is that just like the guys who make the Dresden Files comic book thing?
I think it's...
Well, so they get handed off like points, right? Like, I don't know if he writes them an entire script, but he writes them like a treatment or something like that and says, look, maybe here's some names, here's some high points and that sort of thing. And because I think the comics have like other writing credits, right? Yeah. So it's not, he doesn't write the entire thing. Maybe somebody's tweaking it, editing it, whatever. But so some of it is that format. Some of it is like, hey, here's like, you know, 5 to 10 pages of story. I'm just pulling numbers out of my ass. I'm not trying to belittle anything here. But it's certainly not like, here is peace talks, go make a comic, right? That's not going to be a thing that can happen. So some of it is that format. But honestly, the thing about the Kareen is that they are directly guardian spirits of individual people. So I don't necessarily, like, this isn't the Skinwalker, right? Where the Skinwalker should have been like, oh my God, scary and all this, whatever. And, you know, even Butcher himself talks about how it's more like a doppelganger in the show than like the Navajo Skinwalker that we see is dealt with. So it's a different kind of Skinwalker as a generic term, not the Skinwalker type of thing. Whereas like the Kareen are specifically individual guardians. And what's crazy, it's like, how do you sign up for one of those? Because in theory, the implication is everybody has one, or maybe everybody has one in the Middle East and then everywhere else, they're guardian angels or whatever their appropriate guardian spirit is for their culture. But that guardian spirit took out multiple mummies by himself. It wasn't like he imbued his protectee. You know, he didn't imbue his ward with combat prowess. He took out multiple mummies and then basically infused a wizard and evaporated a goblin and a ghoul, which maybe not super high on the pecking order, but that's still a lot of power. And so it's just kind of like, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of power for that, but something was clearly different here, and I'd like to see it kind of explored. Like, this clearly not everybody has a super kick-ass guardian spirit. Otherwise, why would we need wizards helping to protect humanity, right? Like, what did this guy do? Or his ancestors must have licked some serious, like, so many feet. Like, they kissed so many feet for so many thousands of years that they've got, like, the most kick-ass guardian spirit ever. I don't know. Like, because you saw Talbot's, like, fuck you guys and got cursed for 100 years. Whereas this guy's guardian spirit was like, I'm going to rock everything for, you know, like, 40 years. So, I don't know.
And it's just, it affects the sense of power creep when they keep throwing things in when they shouldn't be. Like, you need to start with something smaller so it stays with the sense of the general progression of the importance and the bigger bad guys. Mm-hmm. And Jim's done a really good job with that in the novels. It's just that, like, everything who isn't done by Jim is getting worse.
Yeah, I mean, and there's, you could say a lot of things like that. I mean, it's different. You know, this one I kind of feel, other than, yeah, the guardian spirit for like protecting one single person is like super OP. They're super overpowered, but, you know, everybody's always going to be quick to say that it's like, look, your creative thing in somebody else's hands is different and therefore bad and wrong and broken. And I think the TV show gets a bit of that. And so that's why I tried to separate it. It's like, okay, cool. Let's pretend it's not Dresden Files. Let's pretend it doesn't have Harry's name. Let's even say we use the exact same names and whatever. Objectively, even if I were just watching that, like if I pretend it's Special Victims Unit with wizards or something, it's still not great. You know, it doesn't magically get better at that point in my mind.
I just think if I don't relate it to the Dresden Files, and granted, I like Charm quite a bit, actually, which was not a great show either, to be honest.
Right.
But like, I think it's okay on its own merits. I think when it's a Dresden Files show, it's terrible. But on its own, it's like, I would watch it. I would probably never rewatch it, but like, oh, okay. I didn't waste my time.
Right. I mean, from somebody who started out with the books and you go watch it, it's awful. Like,
I went to watch it after I read the books.
Right.
I just thought there were plenty. I was like, oh, this is not good as Dresden, but as a TV show, it was okay.
Right. I have personal friends. There are plenty of podcasters who got introduced to the books from the show. So it has helped in some ways. And there are some people who, have liked the show and that sort of thing. But for my own opinion, like if I were watching a show every Tuesday night, it would not be this. Like, I mean, I'm not saying that I watch some TV shows that aren't all so bad, right? But this one was one of those where it's like, yep, yeah, that's kind of a cool concept. I'm going to go watch something else now. Because especially later in the first season, like you could kind of get away from that a little bit. And you realize like, hey, if you just treat it as a procedural with magic, it's better, but it's not like, you know, it's not like something you'd watch on Netflix that, you know, they're known for, right? It's not like, oh man, this is like really freaking good TV. Where has this been my whole life?
Yeah, no, it's not great. It's like pulpy, I think that's the word for it. Like pulp. Like it's kind of bad, but it's okay.
Well, and I mean, let's say compare it for fairness against season one of Supernatural. Which one do you think is better?
Supernatural was a lot better.
And that's what I'm saying. Like Supernatural has a lot of the same kinds of themes. The case files start out as a monster of the week type of situation. And I think that's part of why is so many people don't like the first two books is because that's kind of what they are, is they're noir monster of the week types of stories.
The first season of Buffy was a monster of the week thing too, and then it kind of moved to in a different direction past that.
Right.
With more overarching story.
And that's all I'm saying, really. You know. And I think the comics, yeah, the Welcome to the Jungle is okay and kind of interesting, but as we pointed out, also kind of provides some continuity problems, but also could help fill in some gaps, right? Because there are some concepts that Butcher doesn't introduce until later and may partially be a result of him just not thinking of them until later, or it might have been on purpose. You know, maybe we'll know once everything's said and done because there's still a lot he can't tell us. But there are a lot of things that aren't even hinted at in earlier books that suddenly become very vital to the world Harry's in. Ghoul Goblin, yeah, it was more interesting for where it fit in history and some of the things like in those first couple of panels that got introduced. But yeah, like the story wasn't great. Let's see how the tone changes in Warcry. And honestly, though, I don't think Warcry is going to fix your problem of power creep and that sort of thing. So I'll let you read it and then we can talk about it.
That sounds like a good idea. We'll rant about that in its own episode.
For sure.
All right. Plug our stuff because I hate this part.
Every time.
Yep, I hate it.
So there's that other podcast that you're on.
Yeah, High Fantasy. We are getting like murdered by schedule conflicts. It is terrible.
Bummer.
Yeah.
How many of you are there? Because there's the three of you at least, right?
Yeah. So it's usually just me and Jacob and Colin, but like Jacob was away last week. It's like shit.
Oh yeah. Yep. I know how that goes. So you've got High Fantasy. So you guys talk about all things fantasy, right? Or just
stories,
fantasy
writing. And it's not writing. Just fantasy. It's like any form of writing, but kind of like that's where I read most. And so it's where I'm going to reference most.
Gotcha. Okay. So then you've got Dangerous to Go Alone, which is nerd culture.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. And
they actually do it every week, I think.
Nice.
Ooh, and we've got conflicts.
Right. The Great Scott podcast, which they talk about The Office.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. And then you've got us. And us in the long haul, right? That's it.
Yeah. And you need to start your new political.
Yeah. You're supposed to come up with a better name. You didn't like my name, so.
Yeah. Well, you need to set a date. We'll hold a competition, and then we'll have a date or name for that.
Set a competition? Yeah. That, so we're going to call it Podcasting McPodcast Face. Is that what you're asking? Like, you know, every competition for the last 3 years has ended up with some variation of that, so.
Well, we've got like the inner circle people. They're like, they actually care for some reason. Okay. So I'm sure they'll come up with something good.
Touche, touche. I mean, it's nice to get some following because at least, you know, you're not like totally just shooting in the dark. You know, we got to do some good stuff occasionally.
Yeah. I mean, these people are giving us money. That's kind of a high honor.
Right. For sure.
All right. I think that's everything. But by the way, if you become with people who give us money, we've got goodies. But other than that, bye.
Bye.